This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
3, 2, 1.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio presents Sonia Rodriguez.
Me, Fifth Element. Supreme Being.
Jason Hunt.
You ever get tired of being wrong?
This is Sci-Fi XY.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sci-Fi XY here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Jason Hunt here in the bunker, along with my co-host, Sonia Rodriguez, in our satellite office down in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Hello.
And this week, I ran across an article which is very much close to interests that we share, that Sonia and I share. Sonia being a teacher in the San Diego. I got San Diego Comic-Con on my mind. In the Corpus Christi
school Texas.
Not that there, not that you can mistake one for the other, but this article in the Huffington Post, it's on their blog. Stephen Beal, who is president of the California College of the Arts. And it's an article talking about the connections between art and science. Now, we spend a lot of time, especially here in the genre world, talking about STEM, science, technology, engineering, math. And a lot of people are sitting there starting to, or it's just now coming to the fore that people are paying attention to, the argument that arts are just as important as everything else. And I would tend to agree with that. And this kind of dovetails off of a conversation that we had earlier in the year talking about some of the changes that were going on down in Texas in the schools. And you're part of it. You're on the faculty at not your typical public school with
right.
Metro. So I thought we would talk a little bit about that kind of thing. Why the arts factor in and why they don't get as much priority as they should. And to round out this particular conversation, we have a guest.
Yes, we do have a guest.
Guest on the front porch.
Yes. And you can introduce. He is a science teacher. He was teaching high school level science, but now he will be moving down to middle school this mm-hmm. coming year. I wish I could snag him because we need a fifth grade science teacher. Hint, hint.
It's a little too late for that.
I know, a little too late for that. But nonetheless, he is a science teacher. How long have you been a science teacher?
I've been teaching for 20 years. And in those 20 years, probably science has been for probably about 18, 17 right. years.
Okay.
Of those 20.
A little bit qualified.
Yeah, a little bit qualified. But hello, everybody.
Hello.
I'm Kalunga here.
Well, welcome to the show, Mr. Kalunga. Now, you two have taught together before. You've been co-workers, not just the fact that you're both teachers in the corporate school district, but the fact that you've worked together. And there is this discussion that's now going on. And I personally will admit, I don't know how far back this goes as far as people wanting to get arts in the mix to turn STEM into STEAM, but it certainly is a valid concern, and I think it's probably something that's been going on for a while. It's just now we're starting to get a little bit more focus put on it.
I think John can probably take that. Like, how long has it been going on where they've been trying? Because how long has STEM been around?
Well, as far as STEM itself, I mean, I think it's been around for a long time. But as far as how we need to focus more on maybe incorporating the arts, I've heard about that more recently. It's something that I've been hearing a lot more about, especially in our school district, but I mean, all across the country. It's something that I've just recently really, it's come to the forefront. It's recently come to the forefront.
What's happening at my school, because I teach at Metro Elementary. It's a performing, the full title of the school is Metropolitan Elementary School of Design. And our theme is innovation, creativity. And we are a performing arts school. It's not in our title. It used to be in our in the title where the school came from. The school came from Chula Vista Academy of Fine Arts, which was a performing arts school, which I attended, and my brothers and my sister attended. And it encompassed the fact that not only did you take your core classes, but you had to take a fine arts class. It was required. You took the fine arts class every day. It's not like regular public school where you have fine arts, what is it, once a week? Mm-hmm. It's once a week. The fine arts teacher comes in. You either do music or you do an instrument or something once a week for 40 minutes. That's mainstream public school. In mine, my school, you take it for 40 minutes to 80 minutes a day, every day. And that's how I went to school. That was my elementary school. And then now where I teach, it became, they wrote a grant and then it became the Metropolitan School and Chula Vista kind of went away and we took it over and the kids do a performing arts. Well, it's funny how we're doing this podcast now because there was the huge argument this year because the STAR, it's all about STAR test. And the STAR test, for those of you non-Texans, is the state test, which all teachers are judged by, mm-hmm. and all students are, the accountability is there for that.
And just to interject, for those of you who are non-Texans, we're not going to judge you. You can still listen to the show.
Yeah, of course.
Just because, you know.
So what happens is that the big battle that I faced this school year was the fact that they didn't want the students in art classes, in the fine arts classes. They wanted us to pack on the math. And in fifth grade, they take the science test as well. So they were saying they need to be pulled out of those fine arts classes and they need more math and more science.
Well, and you were telling me that conference you were attending, the consultants, the experts, so-called, right. were telling you that you need to double the amount of time that you spent teaching math.
Right. They were telling us that we needed to double the amount of time that I taught math. And I totally disagree with that. I came to the school with the intention that the student would be a well-rounded child. And in order for them to be a well-rounded child, they need everything. They need science, technology, engineering, mathematics, literature, and the arts, and, you know, everything. They need everything in order. And the arts teach discipline. It's kind of funny how I don't have a whole lot of discipline problems because the kids are already disciplined because they're in arts. If you're going to play an instrument or if you're going to be in any form of art, theater, anything like that, it's discipline. It has to be a discipline. So, you know, when they come to my classes, they already have that instilled because they're already learned that discipline.
Well, plus, too, I mean, if you look at the engineering side of things, I mean, architects and civil engineers and mechanical engineers, if you incorporate a certain amount of art training, you're looking at perspective, and you're looking at 3D space and design. That certainly does incorporate a certain amount of art skills. I mean, somebody's got to draw the blueprint. Somebody's got to draw the elevations and the plans and the artist renderings and the concept sketches and that kind of thing. So there certainly is a place for that. But also the idea that the arts fuel the imagination. I mean, where does invention come from? If you're going to create the next super roller coaster, not only is it an engineering feat, but it's also an artistic endeavor. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that without an appreciation for the arts, whether it's literature or visual arts or that kind of thing, you're depriving the students of a whole piece of what it is to know things.
And going back to the testing, because, I mean, it's pretty obvious. It makes a lot of sense to have a well-rounded individual, to raise and educate well-rounded individuals. However, and I can tell you in the state of Texas, but I know it's occurring all across the country, standardized testing doesn't necessarily teach most of the fine arts. Right now, the big push is we got to bring up our reading scores, math scores, because like Sonia was saying before, and I'm very well aware of this, as teachers, we are judged by the reading scores, writing scores, math scores, science scores of our students. So where do the fine arts fit in there?
Right.
It's not tested. Well, we're going to devote more time and get these kids prepared for standardized tests, well, something's got to go.
Yeah, well, and here in Missouri, I know that the standardized tests focus a lot on the reading and the math, not so much anything else.
Yeah.
And to me, and this is something that Sonia and I've talked about before, I am one of these right-wing conspiracy nuts who thinks that a lot of our problems have come from the fact that we've got federal oversight on the local schools. And you have people in offices that don't have any direct connection to the students or the teachers deciding. Well, I mean, you talk about the standardized tests, and this is something that Sonia has complained about a lot. When you get the curriculum from the state, and you end up teaching to the test. You're not teaching in a progressive method that builds. You learn this, then you learn this, then you learn this. It's you learn this so you can take this test. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to know it. You just have to regurgitate it, and we can get the test scores up so we can get our federal money. And I think that has so screwed up the public school system. You know, and not to assign it to any particular party, Democrats, but you know, the Federal Department of Education didn't come around until 1976, and we were fine before that. That's just me, though.
Well, I think you're right on. I mean, as far as people that I think are not in the classroom, maybe have never been in the classroom or have left the classroom and have been out for so long that they've lost touch.
They forgot how wonderful it was to teach children.
Well, it's that, but plus you've got government functionaries, whether they're at a state level or a federal level, who, like John says, have never been in a classroom. You know, they have training in bureaucracy and management and stuff like that, and they don't have the direct connection to determine what's best for the kids. And I think if you return control of the schools to at the very least the county level, but more directly the city level, your performance scores are going to just go through the roof.
We have Israel has said this several times, that a lot of the people that are trying to run education are trying to run education based on the child that they have, which if they're successful adults, they more than likely have successful children. Their
sure.
children are not behavior problems. They're doing well in school. They'll do what's asked of them. They're not having economic or, you know, problems at home because their parents are politicians and Democrats, and they're doing well for themselves, and they provided a pretty stable home. So in Israel's mindset is that they're thinking, this is the cookie cutter child. All children
right.
are like this. All children in school are like my child. So they can all do it.
Well, and there's a certain amount of disconnect.
Right. Israel says that they're tunnel vision.
Uh-huh.
That's about a handful of the kids that we get.
Well, and you also stop and consider that the politicians, the suits in charge, are making enough money that they can send their kids to private schools that don't fall under any of the criteria for this.
So they're assuming, you know, that it's just a generic cookie cutter kid,
right?
That, you know, why can't the teachers make them do this? I mean, this is my kid would do it. You know?
Exactly.
And I had never thought about it like that. I thought that was a real eye opener for me when Israel said that. He goes, well, because they got perfect kids, and they think that your classroom is all the same kid of that kid that they're raising at home.
I mean,
think about it. If I had a bunch of, you know, Jonathans in my room, a bunch of Esais in my room, shoot, I'd be the best teacher ever. I'd be renowned.
Wait. You're not the best teacher ever anyway?
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Thank you. But you know what I mean? It's easy. I'm not going to lie. It's easy to teach Esai. It's easy to teach Jonathan. You know, because those are the kids that are just, you know, their parents are engaging and they're engaging their child and this is what's going to be learned and stuff like that. So, yeah. So then this going back to our original topic, it's the arts that will engage the children that are not excited about science and math, technology.
Yeah. You want to find a way to get the kids to care about what they're learning.
Exactly.
And to do that, they have to enjoy what they're doing.
Right, because when I was teaching fractions, it was a very hard, sad day for me. I was, you know, trying to teach them the fractions, trying to get them to understand. And then I remembered, these are performing arts kids. Half of these kids are in band. Half of them are in orchestra class with me. And the other five kids are in piano. So I dropped the whole thing and went to music.
Sure.
Because they're fifth graders and they can read music. And wow. This is a whole note. This is the measure. If I need to finish this off, how much more do I need? You need a half note because two beats. I was like, now, could I do that in a regular school?
No.
Could I do that in a school that doesn't have the arts?
No.
Wow. Bam. I mean, you have to have it. You have to have it.
Now, of course, you're speaking completely hypothetically, because if you ever did anything off the curriculum, then you would have issues there, right?
So yes, true. Exactly. True. But any good teacher would know that if you're what's doing is not working, what is the word you use?
Reinvent myself.
Adapt and survive, right?
You have to be always on the edge of your seat. You always have to be ready for the next thing because what you're going to do, I mean, it can be beautiful. I've played off beautiful lesson plans in my bedroom and in the shower.
Oh, yeah.
And then you come the next day and they're just.
Have a plan B, plan C.
Yeah, you have to have a plan B, plan B, plan C, whatever. And I was thinking, because I'm currently in a production here. Mary Poppins is fixing to open on Friday. Whoop, whoop, plug. And I was thinking about the podcast we were doing, and this week is Tech Week. And I was reading the article, rereading the article because I'd already read it. And I loved what the article said. It says, artists ask the questions and scientists come up with the answers. And I loved it because it happened to us at the Harvard Playhouse. Because if you know the story of Mary Poppins, she is a magical nanny, right? Things have to happen on stage that are magical. So what was going on was that there's a scene in Mary Poppins where the table has to collapse, but she has to make the table magically come back up. Now, the first plan was to have Tex in Black come across the stage and pick up the table and go across.
All right.
But the director said, that's not magical. We need magic. So it was funny. He's like, how can we make the table come up? You know? So then I was like, there's the question.
Yep.
How do we? And then so here comes Josh, the set director, the set, the props guy, the guy that builds the sets.
Uh-huh.
He just stands there and he's looking at the table and he's standing there and I could just see his mind just like, I can make it do it. It's going to happen. So then yesterday he comes and he's got the remote control for like a thing and he did it. It's this rigged. Somebody's got to fall, hit the table. The table collapses. And then he turns on his little mechanism. And then when she snaps her finger, the table just automatically with the remote control comes back up.
Wow.
That's cool.
And I was like, and it's got gadgets and science and it's got to be this and that. And we're talking about it. Also, you know, Mary Poppins flies. And this was a good moment. This happened a couple
How did you make a fly?
Yeah, this is a good moment. A couple of This happened a couple of weeks ago. You're going to like this story.
Okay, okay.
They're doing the rigging for her to fly.
Okay.
And they're doing it, and they're having the weights on one side because it's a pulley system for her. And then, you know, the weights weren't on the other side. So the techs are running over, and I said, the weights need to come over here, blah, blah, blah. So they're hooking up the weights and everything like that. And Elias, he's seen it, but he doesn't understand it. And I'm like, I said, you took science in third grade. We did simple machines. Yeah. It's a lever. Look at it. It's a lever. It's got weight and everything like that. So I'm sitting there and I'm showing him. He goes, oh, I go, and there's the pulley. There it is. I see it. Because, you know, it's way up there. I said, do you see it? I go, now she's going to come over here on this side. And I'm sitting there and I'm showing Elias the science of it. And I turn around and we have an audience. All the little people from the calf, you know, they're all watching me. They're listening attentively. And I was like,
You're in teacher mode.
Science is cool. And I was like, yeah. And then Matt, one of the guys, he's all like, I thought she taught math. And so it was like, but none of that happens in the theater. None of that happens without science.
Well, and I was looking, I was reading an article with Robert Burnett, who's working on Star Trek Axanar, a fan film. And they were asking him about, because Axanar apparently is a giant space battle in the history of Star Trek, and they were asking him about, you know, the visual effects. Are we going to see the big space, you know, everybody's expecting this massive space battle? And it's interesting that he said that one of the things they were looking at when they're designing the visual effects is they're looking at the science of how things would actually work. You know, movement in space, combat in space, explosions, and all that kind of thing when they're designing the visual effects. And I think that's something that you see a lot in the science fiction realm, especially now. Used to be not so much, but nowadays, you want it to be at least believable, not necessarily 100% realistic, but an understanding of the sciences does inform the arts. And I think it should go the other way as well. If you're an artist or something that actually can help you, if you've got that kind of training, whether it's music, because music is very mathematical. Art, visual, you're talking about design and perspective and that kind of thing. That helps with the engineering designs. I think there is an essential relationship between the two that a lot of people have missed.
There's a partnership with every single aspect. I mean, you can find, there's infinite partnerships.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely a partnership. It makes total sense. But in this testing generation that we're in, it's going to be very hard to change the trend. It's going to be very hard. We're going to have to revamp the whole system.
I think one of the things that presents a challenge with that is when you start to introduce the arts back into the whole mix of curriculum, you actually start to teach the kids to think.
Yeah.
And imagine. And I think one of the things that's been lacking, especially in public schools, is nobody is teaching the kids critical thinking skills.
Exactly.
Nobody's teaching them how to look at something and analyze it and say, does this make sense? If it doesn't make sense, how do you make sense out of it? Now, the conspiracy nut in me says that's deliberate, but it is sorely lacking in the public schools that we're not teaching the kids to think. We're just teaching them to repeat.
Exactly.
They get the information, they give it back to you, and then they're done. One of the complaints that I've had with my kid, he's 13 now, he's going into the eighth grade, and I keep telling him, the things that you learn are things that you need to remember, because the next thing you learn works off of that, it builds. And he has, you know, a challenge retaining information that he doesn't think is useful. And there's nothing in the curriculum to inspire him to want to keep this knowledge in his head, because he doesn't see any use for it. Even in his computer design class, here's the computer design, and he's not drawing a connection between art, the, you know, visual art, and the computer design. And I think that's a big deficiency in schools. So how do we fix it in 3 minutes?
3 minutes.
3 minutes
or less.
3 minutes or less. How do you fix it? Where does it start getting more people to understand how essential arts are to science?
Well, like I said, the system, in my view, and this is 20 years of public and private school education. I was a Catholic school principal. I've been a coach, teacher. When I was a Catholic school principal, private school principal, I was also kind of like the custodian at times. I've seen the best of both worlds. It's not something that is going to happen overnight. It's a revamping of the system. It's also, I mean, I'd hate to say it, but it's not very popular with my fellow teachers. My fix for the whole situation, and I don't know if I should even say it.
Go ahead. You're among friends.
I'm more for vouchers. I'm more for
amen.
Abolishing the teachers' unions. It's more about you should make the decision of where your kids go and the kind of education that they're going to receive. I would love for my kids to get more arts. I would like my kids to get more of a moral, theological foundation. But that's not going to happen in public schools.
Well, and we've seen over and over again where in the municipalities where there have been voucher programs, the success rate for the kids is much higher. Especially in those schools that are like magnet schools or art schools that have an emphasis on that. And of course the suits who have been bought by the unions are sitting there going, oh no, we can't have this. It doesn't matter that it's successful. What matters is that it shuts the unions out. And I think you're right. I think a lot of this is politics that there are people that are putting politics in front of the kids. And I think that's a huge mistake. I think the kids should be a priority, and I think arts should be an essential part of the curriculum.
Yeah, I've said it, you know, I took my kids out of the system because I wanted them to be at Metro. I mean, I applied for the lottery for them to go to Chula Vista every year, didn't make it. And then when I saw the opportunity to leave, you know, Kohl's and go to Metro because Chula Vista was changing, I thought, well, that's where I want my kids to be. Not only do they do the performing arts, but they also do the project-based learning, where they have to, you know, they're given a problem, they're given a situation, and they have to come up with a solution on their own. So, you know, I've got so many kids in my room, and they come up with six different solutions to a problem. And you talk to people and they're like, what is project-based learning? How is that teaching them anything? You know, they need to learn the skills and basics and all that. And, you know, and I'm all for that. I'm all for learning the skills. They have to know how to read, you know, they have to know how to write, do multiplication and all that stuff, but they also need to problem solve. And, you know, I agree with Jason. You have to give them problems in order for them to problem solve.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, you kind of help them, but you got to let them come up with it themselves. And yes, it takes time.
It takes time.
And it takes time for them to have to do that. And that's what they don't like. We don't have time for that. You need to be doing this drill and kill,
exactly.
Because that's not on the test, you know?
Exactly.
So it's
right.
Like, it's a different way of learning. And, you know, we're fighting the big battle at Metro E. We fight it every day that this is the best way to teach. We went to a conference this summer, Ignite, and everything, you know, I'm going to get fired now too.
Yeah.
Everything that our district is initiating this year goes against what we were told at the Ignite conference. Every single thing. It was like, they're all about innovation, design, creativity, doing this, thinking outside the box.
Of course.
If our district now, I mean, if we put the desk in rows, I think they would smile.
I really think that if we put the desk in rows,
I think they'd walk into the room and go, wow, the desks are in rows.
Straight lines.
Who
right?
Who are these people? I haven't had my desk in rows in years, you know? And so it's like, I feel like we're moving backwards. We were going so well. We were moving forward.
Yep.
Slowly moving forward. But I think the district has changed. It's all about, we need to be on top. We need the best scores. We need the best teachers that have the best scores. Mm-hmm. We need this. We need to get in the paper because we need to be the best, one of the best districts in the state. And I think they've forgotten that we were already one of the best districts in the state.
Well, and the kids are being left behind because of it. Now there's a site I'm going to point people to because I don't have the resources myself. This is Rhode Island School of Design. The website stemtosteam.org. I have not had a chance to really look through it, but there is a map that they have of the various different programs around the country. Internationally, that are focused on trying to get arts back in the STEM program, adding arts to all of that through the K through 12 programs, and we'll link to that. But I think it's very important. This is a conversation we'll probably keep having for a number of years to try to get people to understand that without art, you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
So
to quote one of my favorite movies, Mr. Holland's Opus. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it's a good movie.
He's going to lose his job at the end, and what is he? Because he's the music teacher, and he's going to lose his job at the end. And what do they say? They say, if you take away the arts, these kids are not going to have anything to read and write about.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, and you can write about what you think on this and any of the other topics that we have in our discussion. You can send us an email, scifixy@scifixforme.com, or you can leave us a comment. You can find us over on all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Tumblr, Google+, and Pinterest. And yes, I read the list that time, so I wouldn't forget anything. Our podcast you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much any app that you've got that you can play a podcast on. Share the link. Let's get more of the conversation going about adding arts to the sciences, marrying the two, because you gotta have one to have the other. So that's gonna do it for us this week. John Kalunga, thank you very much for joining the conversation today. And Sonia Rodriguez, we will be back with another episode next week talking about something.
Sounds good.
All right.
Until next time.
This is Jason Hudd here for all of us here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio. We will be back next week. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.